This is Sheldon Brown, just back from the Interbike Show in Las Vegas, and here is my podcast report on that show. I would mention that I had hoped to do some interviews. They mostly didn't come out so well, except for the one I did with Grant Peterson of Rivendell Bicycles. That one came out great, and it's long enough that I've put it on a separate file, which is also available on this site, sheldonbrown.com/podcasts. The first part of the Interbike Show is the outdoor demo in Bootleg Canyon. As I started walking up the hill, the first thing that caught my eye was a strange two-wheel drive bicycle called the X-Cycle, E-X-Y-L-E, from Germany. This is a road bike with a handlebar that looks a little bit like a mountain bike handlebar with two bar ends, but the bar ends slide in and out in synchronization with one another. And by moving them in and out, a linkage of cables and freewheels drives the front wheel. The marketing pitch on this device is that it gives good upper body exercise. I test rode it, and that's true. My arms got nice and tired, and it did help a little bit in moving it along, especially getting back up the hill to where the booth was. I don't think it's particularly practical for general use, because in general riding, your speed is really limited by your aerobic capacity, and it doesn't really matter that much how many muscles you use. On the other hand, this does give the opportunity of an extra burst of anaerobic power for climbing, perhaps. And if you are very concerned about getting upper body exercise as well as lower body exercise, it certainly will do that. This might make it suitable as a training bike for triathletes, although the in and out motion of the arms is not really that much like swimming, so I'm not sure how helpful that would be. It might also have some application for off-road riding in soft terrain, because it is a two-wheel drive system. They had a mountain bike version there, but that one was not really ready to be test ridden. A little farther up the hill was the Raleigh Road Bike booth, where I tried out the Raleigh Cadent, C-A-D-E-N-T. This is a new line of road bikes. There are four or five different models at different price points. It's a lightweight, high-performance bike with a shorter top tube and a taller head tube than is commonly seen on more racing-oriented bikes. So it's designed for someone who wants a light, fast bike, but one that's a bit more comfortable than the typical racing bike. This happens to work out particularly well for me because I'm very long-legged and have a short upper body, and no stock road bike with a stock stem is ever comfortable for me, because when I get the saddle up high enough for my long legs, the handlebars tend to be 6 inches below the saddle, which does not work for me for more than a couple of miles. But the Cadent was quite comfortable and quite fast. It was actually the first bike I've ridden with the 10-speed STI Brifters, and I have to say that I really like the ergonomics of the newer model. There's a sort of an extra grip position with your fingers wrapped around in front of the brake lever, and it generally felt very nice. The most amazing bike that I saw and tried at the show was the Surly Pugsley. This is a project that's been in development for 2 or 3 years at Surly. It is a non-suspended mountain bike with unusually fat tires. They're about 4-inch tires in width. This required a whole lot of modification of everything involved because it needs a special rear hub, and it's offset. So the wheel is dishless, and the frame has the right fork end quite a lot farther from center than the left one. This puts the whole cassette off to the right and allows a dishless rear wheel. This also is necessary because that was really the only way they could get the chain to clear the fat tire. Interestingly, they use the same system for the front wheel. So the front wheel hub, and it's off-center, and the fork is off-center. The right fork blade bends out quite a bit farther than the left one, so it looks like a bent fork. It makes the front and rear wheels interchangeable, and the standard front hub is actually threaded for a single-speed freewheel, so that if you want to use the bike as a single-speed, you can just get two of the front hubs. Or, as I said, if something goes wrong with your rear cassette out in the boonies, you can switch wheels and continue on in single-speed mode. The bike has studs for cantilever brakes, but I really don't think that anybody will ever use them. It really wants disc brakes. The fat tires would really interfere with cabling of any type of cantilever brake that I can imagine, whether direct pull or center pull type. Anyway, I saw a prototype of this last year and was very interested in it. I think the year before they were showing off the rims and tires, which are also very special, called the Large Marge. But this year they're in full production and I was able to test ride one. The test riding is very different from just looking at it. When you look at it, first of all, you think it must be really heavy because the tires are so visually bulky. But of course, they are mostly air, and the bike doesn't have any suspension bits, so it's actually not all that heavy. It's comparable to many dual suspension bikes, probably lighter than a lot of them. I took it out on a fairly steep, quite loose, sandy, gravelly climb out behind the show area, part of the mountain bike course, and I was amazed at how well it climbed. In fact, you know, I'm a 61-year-old fat guy, but I was passing skinny youngsters on dual suspension bikes and feeling very comfortable doing it. I'm very, very impressed with this bike. I expect it to really revolutionize recreational mountain biking, especially in soft areas such as Cape Cod, where there's a lot of sand and you tend to sink in. I think this is going to be the killer bike for Cape Cod use and for other areas. Beach use, it should work on most beaches, I would imagine. The folks at Hurley say it's great in the snow, too, but only the winter will let us know that. Now, that's not the only thing that Quality Bicycle Products has been up to. They've done a joint venture with Grant Peterson on a new bike called the Blériot, which is named after a great French aviator, the first to fly over the English Channel back in 1909. It's a lugged steel frame made for 650B wheels, made in Taiwan, unlike other previous Rivendell products, which have all been either from the U.S. or from Japan. It's a little bit reminiscent of the Saluki, although it's going to sell for about half the price of the Saluki, and it's not as pretty as the Saluki. The lugwork is more basic, but quite substantial. It's quite a nice-looking bike, actually. The fact that Quality Bicycle Products has gotten on board with the 650B movement is very encouraging, because this means that tires, rims, and wheels are going to be readily available to any bike shop in the country, and really adds a lot of momentum to the 650B movement. Went by the Brooks booth and saw a couple of new models from Brooks. They're bringing back the classic Swallow saddle in a more affordable version. They had done a special hand-stitched limited edition that retails for about $400. Those have sold pretty well considering what they cost, but the new version lacks the hand stitching around the edges, but is the same basic shape, similar to the old Swallow, although now with a titanium undercarriage. I don't have pricing on this yet, but it should do very well. The Swallow is an unusually comfortable saddle, although it's an unusually uncomfortable looking saddle. They've also done a retro saddle, a model I had never heard of before, called the B18. This is a ladies' saddle with loop springs similar to the B72, but with a very ornate arabesque-type pattern embossed into the leather, and with the leather in the front of the nose curving down to cover the whole front of the hardware there. It's a very old-timey-looking saddle, and I expect it to do quite well. It's a very nice-looking piece. Other news from Brooks was that they've decided that in future all Brooks saddles will have bag loops, which I think is a very good move, and it's very good news for fans of Brooks and Caradice and similar British-style touring bags. Also at the Brooks booth, I got the skinny on Bill Lane of Wallingford Bicycle Parts. He's based in New Orleans, and we had all been worried as to what had happened to him. He kind of dropped off the face of the internet after Hurricane Katrina, and nobody really knew what had happened. The word is that his place is on high ground and has stayed dry. I guess he may have lost a vehicle, but his stock is safe and his family is safe, though they're still not back home and they're still not on the internet. Wallingford is probably our largest competitor in internet sales of Brooks saddles, but everybody likes Bill and we all wish him the best and are glad that he'll still be in the business. I mentioned Caradice bags. I stopped by the Caradice booth and spoke with David Chadwick, the owner of Caradice, and a very pleasant fellow. They've got a couple of new models, including a special, very large bag for Brompton bicycles. He also showed me the latest version of their Bagman bag support, which I've never carried, but after looking at the latest version, I think I will start doing that. Funny thing, just across the aisle from the Caradice booth was this booth for some company selling what they described as a revolutionary height-adjustable stem. Isn't that a remarkable idea, a handlebar stem that you can adjust the height? What will they think of next? Later on, I swung by the Sturmey Archer booth, the 8-speed internal gear hub that was shown last time in. In fact, I've got one ordered in for myself to install on a bike and test ride to see how I like it. Something less expected was that they now have a Dyna hub again. Sturmey Archer was the original manufacturer of the Dyna hub. This is a front hub with a lighting generator built into it. They discontinued theirs in the late 50s, I believe, and they had been kind of left behind with newer models that are much more powerful. The original Sturmey Archer Dyna hub was around 1.8 watts, whereas contemporary models from Shimano and Schmidt are in the 3-watt range. But now Sturmey Archer has come out with one that looks actually a lot like the Shimano unit. It's available in either 2.4 or a 3-watt version with a drum brake. The drum brake is very similar to the Sturmey Archer Elite drum brake that they've used as a separate unit. This hub looks like it's going to be a real winner for commuters and the like. One of the most eagerly anticipated mysteries of the year has been the new SRAM Road Group, including their own version of handlebar brake shifters for drop bars. This has long been rumored, and this year they're showing a sample on a bike in a sealed glass case. You can't touch it, but you can look at it. They won't even tell you how it works. The brifters have a secondary lever behind the main lever, looking a lot like a Shimano STI unit, but the main lever does not move sideways. SRAM is not saying how it actually works. There are a couple of theories about it. SRAM will neither confirm nor deny them. They claim that there is some sort of a patent litigation issue going on that has to be resolved first. One of the theories is that all the shifting is done with the secondary lever, and that you push it just part way to upshift and farther to downshift on the rear. Sort of like the way a roller window shade works, where you pull a little bit or a lot, depending on whether you want to go up or down. The other theory is that the main lever has the ability to move in the opposite direction of braking. If you look at the protruding part above the pivot point, it looks like you could, from the hoods, grab a hold of that and pull it, which would make the bottom part of the lever move forward. Or, of course, from the drops, you could push the bottom part of the lever away from you with your fingers. The levers are very nice looking, with a carbon fiber blade, and both cables run underneath the handlebar tape in the same manner as Campagnolo Ergos. Well, that's about it for my 2005 Las Vegas podcast. Make sure to listen to the Grant Peterson interview also at sheldonbrown.com/podcasts. One of my very favorite composers is the late Russian composer Dmitri Shostakovich. He is best known, at least in this country, for his symphonies, especially the Symphony No. 5 and, to a lesser extent, the Leningrad Symphony No. 7. But one of the pieces that I really like an awful lot is the Preludes and Fugues Opus 87. This is a set of 24 preludes and fugues, consciously inspired by Bach's Voltempierte Klavier, but in Shostakovich's rather more modern and dissonant style. He originally wrote these for performance by Tatiana Nikolaeva, and I have a recording of these pieces. Preludes are fine, but I happen to be particularly fond of fugues, so I'm going to play you the Fugue No. 3 in G major. Thank you. That was Shostakovich's Fugue No. 3 in G major, Opus 87. Now here's the Fugue No. 5 in D major, also Opus 87. That was the Fugue No. 5 in D major, performed by Tatiana Nikolaeva on a Melodia CD. I hope you enjoyed this little taste of the Opus 87 Preludes and Fugues. There are 24 of them altogether, one in each of the major and minor keys. Anyway, that's the end of this podcast, and I hope you'll tune in for the next one at sheldonbrown.com/podcasts.